Welcome in, everyone, to another episode of the Double Dribble Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Harper, head basketball analyst of Tide Illustrated of the Rivals Network. You can find me on Twitter at HarperNation24 for all things Alabama basketball. And this is your source for all things basketball for the past 5 years now. Hard to believe it's been 5 years since this podcast started up. But we're nearing the end of another college basketball season. And with it being March, games are starting to become more tighter. They're starting to become more important and magnified. Unfortunately for Alabama, they're starting to become a lot more difficult on both ends of the floor. And that was no different on Tuesday night, where Florida won 105-87 over Alabama in Gainesville. Alabama's been struggling offensively, defensively all year, but offensively recently. And we'll kind of jump into the statistics here in a second to where we're going to find out where Alabama struggled and kind of see if there's a pattern here that started to form from their last game against Tennessee at home, where they were absolutely abysmal. Florida just ran Alabama out of the gym after the first 15 minutes of the game. Alabama led with 8 minutes to go in the first half, 19-18. And then they get outscored 36-16. You get outscored by 26-16. I'm sorry, my math was wrong. Get outscored 26-16 the final 8 minutes of the half to go down 44-35. When Alabama wasn't playing well in the first half early on anyways offensively, their defense was actually keeping them in this game. And I thought they were playing really well, probably the best defense I've seen for a 10-minute stretch since, I couldn't even tell you when. Maybe since Georgia in the second half on the road where they won? I mean, that's how bad their defense has been the past 2 months, really all season, but the past 2 months has been insanely bad, especially on the road. Seems like every time they go on the road against a good team, they give up 100 points. They nearly give up 100 points at home, especially the last time when they played Florida in overtime, they nearly did. But overall, there's not much positive to take from this game at all. At all. Mark Sears maybe scoring 33 points. Obviously, he brought his A game. Florida could not stop him getting into the paint. He was doing whatever he wanted at will. And I know that wasn't by design for Florida to do, because Todd Golden was absolutely furious every time he drove left, drove right, and the guards were just like a funnel of just letting him in the paint and knowing how well he finishes around the rim. He had a field day. Now, nobody else stepped up with Mark Sears, though. Nobody. So let's just kind of take in all the full team stats and kind of see where it fell apart for Alabama. Because shooting-wise was not good. I mean, they shot 44% overall. They shot 26 of 47 from 2, 5 of 23 from 3. Florida shot 7 of 19 from 3, so they were more efficient overall, shooting 46% from the field. But where it really fell apart for Alabama, or where the big disparity was at the free throw line. Now, Florida made 20 more free throws than Alabama did, 40-20. Florida made 15 more free throws than Alabama attempted. Alabama was 20 of 25. Florida was 40 of 46. 71 free throws taken. It's absolutely incredible. Can't remember the last time that Florida or another SEC team made 40 free throws in a game. Had to have been a while. I'm sure Auburn has in an Auburn-Alabama game in the jungle. I remember distinctly one specific game to where they shot a lot of free throws. Might not have been 40, but 40 is an incredibly high number for any team to make in one game. Now, rebounding, dead even, 40 to 40 there. Alabama had the slight edge on offensive rebounds. Florida had the slight edge on defensive. Now, when you get down into fast break points, points off turnovers, those are typically the points of emphasis to where it'll point to Alabama winning or losing. Because typically when Alabama wins those two statistics, they'll win. And if they do not, then they're going to lose. Florida was 17 points off turnovers to Alabama 7. And Florida had 27 fast break points to Alabama's 8. Florida was just giving Alabama so much trouble out in transition. The transition defense for Alabama was brutally bad. There was a time with 9 minutes to go in the first or in the second half where Florida had a two-on-four breakaway. And I posted this on my Twitter of a before and after picture of where you see two trailers for Alabama crossing half court. You got Mark Sears in help defense, and I can't remember who it was off the top of my head that was guarding the ball. And Florida had a guy all the way in the opposite corner. 2 seconds later, you got the Florida guy all the way down at the baseline, and four Alabama players lined up in a Congo line doing I don't know what. Not playing defense, that's for sure. And Florida player easily kicks it out to a wide open three, and they make it. I mean, that's just how bad Alabama's defense has been, whether it be half court transition, does not matter. It's just been really, really bad. And that's going to be their ultimate downfall in a winner-go-home tournament-style format. If you can't stop somebody, all it takes is one game of not scoring 100 points, and you're likely going home, especially if the matchup is bad. Alabama's going to be specifically matchup dependent when it comes to the NCAA tournament. And that's a fact. If they draw someone that's bigger, more physical, and can score in the first round, I could see them going home the first round. Second round for sure. Second round's going to be more than likely they're going to be a 4 seed, so they'll play a 5 in the second round. And I can promise you those 5 seeds, they're going to be right on par with the talent level that Alabama has. And when that's the case, more times than not in the past month or two, Alabama's struggled. But we'll kind of get into that, the bracketology, the SEC standings. We're not skipping over the SEC tournament. I'll make sure to kind of go over that. I've been covering the scenarios and everything for what Alabama C can be, who they'll face in the past week on Twitter. And it's become more clear after tonight with Tennessee beating South Carolina to win the SEC regular season championship. Alabama has clinched a top 4 seed and a double bye in the SEC tournament, which they can clinch it with a win against Arkansas in the last game, which we'll preview here in a moment briefly. But let's go over to the box score, kind of see individually who did what for Alabama and Florida. You had Mark Sears score 33. He had 0 assists and 1 rebound. That is very uncommon for Mark Sears, and only 1 steal. So Mark Sears was nothing but a scorer. He did not impact the game in any other way but scoring the basketball, and that cannot happen with your best player. He has to impact the game in multiple areas. Grant Nelson had 12 points, 6 rebounds. He fouled out after 25 minutes. I think this is his third straight game of fouling out, which is incredibly bad. And a lot of the fouls that are called on him are incredibly bad. Nick Pringle, he's also a guy that gets quick fouls called on him. And Alabama cannot afford that any game. Whether it's him, whether it's Nick Pringle, whether it's Grant Nelson, Jaron Stevenson, even Mohamed Diabate. Like, they cannot afford anybody in their front court getting in foul trouble. They just don't have the depth for it. Aaron Estrada had 17 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists on 8 of 14 shooting. I thought he had a pretty good game all around as well. Rylan Griffin struggled mightily. He ended up going out in the second half with an injury. What looked like could be a bad injury, I'm hearing that it's not really bad. It'll end up being, I believe it's a bruise on his calf, and they're trying to check out and see if his ankle, make sure everything's structurally sound with his ankle. But it sounds just like a bruise, and he might miss against Arkansas to have him fresh against in the SEC tournament. I'm not sure. Would not surprise me if he did miss on Saturday, but does not sound like it will be a serious injury, more like a day-to-day thing. Jaren Stevenson continues to be absolutely terrible in the starting lineup. He only played 14 minutes, scored 3 points, 3 rebounds on 1 of 4 shooting. And Rylan Griffin, I mentioned, only had 3 points. So you're getting two guys in your starting lineup that are consistently scoring 3 to 5 points, which when you're not a deep team like Alabama isn't with high-quality players, you need more from your starters. Like Latrell Reitzel, he's typically going to be your starter, but he's coming back from a concussion, and he only played 8 minutes, scored 2 points. So you can't rely on him much until he gets back fully healthy. And I don't know if he suffered a setback in this game or not, but him not playing a lot does not bode well unless he's just they're ramping him up, which that could be a viable case. But Alabama needs Latrell Reitzel to play 20-plus minutes to be at their best. And if he's not, you're going to get results like these because he's probably one of Alabama's best perimeter defenders. He's turned into that throughout the season, and he's their best shooter. So you take your best perimeter defender, your best shooter, and you take him out of the lineup for majority of the game, it puts a lot of strain on those starters. And you got two guys that are struggling bad recently in Rylan Griffin and Jaren Stevenson. And one guy in Grant Nelson that can't stay out of foul trouble. So you're relying a lot on Sam Walters, who has been in a funk shooting-wise. He went 1 of 6 again on Tuesday, and he fouled out, scored 2 points. Nick Pringle had a really solid game. He's been playing really well of late, and he can't stay out of foul trouble. He ended up with 4 fouls, 11 points in 18 minutes, 5 rebounds. And then Mohamed Diabate, I thought, played well defensively. He ended up with 4 fouls also, but he only played 7 minutes. He just doesn't add much offensively, and it's really hard to keep him on the floor in certain lineup situations because you need somebody that can create and you need somebody that can shoot from deep, especially if he's going to be playing the 3 or the 4 where Rylan Griffin plays majority of the time. Looking at Florida, I mean, they had a great game from their starters. They had 4 guys score 19 or more points. You had Will Richards score 23. You had Walter Clayton Jr. score 22. And then Tyrese Samuel and Zion Pullen each scored 19. Now, Hanlog didn't only score 2 points. He was in foul trouble a lot of the game, but they didn't need him. I mean, you had Alex Condon come off the bench and score 10 points, 7 rebounds, and had 3 blocks. I mean, they are deep in the front court. They got high-quality front court guys. I mean, even Thomas Hall can come in and give you 20 good minutes and give you 7 rebounds. I mean, they're a really good team. They're a very good team, and they're a team I could see making it to the second weekend, and if it falls right, maybe even beyond that. Poor man's UConn from last year based on how their team is made up. Big guys on the front line, guards that can create and make shots from anywhere. And when you have that, it makes the game a lot easier in March. So watch out for Florida when it comes to March Madness and kind of see where they are in their bracket. I would not want to be – they'll probably be around a 5 seed. I would not want to be that 4 seed that would play him in the second round. That's for sure. So Alabama plays Arkansas at home on Saturday. And that game is going to be obviously a big game for Alabama. It's not one that they can afford to lose at this point because they've lost three of their last five, last two overall, three of their last four overall. And losing to Arkansas at home would be debilitating. And it would put them probably on the five seed line in the NCAA tournament. It would bump them out of the top four seeds in the SEC tournament. It would create a domino effect for them. And it would remind me a lot of in the 2021-2022 season, where they, I believe, lost their last three in a row of the season. They lost to Vanderbilt in the first round of the SEC tournament, and then they lost in the first round to Notre Dame. Like, it just spiraled out of control. This team can prevent that with as historically great of an offense as they have, but they cannot let it spiral. They need a very pick-me-up-like effort against Arkansas and go out and defeat a team that's not playing good at all. They've been playing better recently, but they still did lose to Vanderbilt at home just a week ago. They beat LSU tonight, and they played Kentucky, scored 102 on them in Rupp. They did get up 111, but this is a team that Alabama should dominate. This is going to be a where's your head space at type of game. Now, you got Khalif Battle for Arkansas that was on an absolute heater. Mekhi Mitchell in their front court has been playing, you know, all SEC level the past month. I believe he's averaging over 15 points a game and 7 rebounds. So Grant Nelson and Nick Pringle are going to have their hands full trying not to foul him because he is active. He's active on the boards. He's active offensively, defensively in the paint. So Grant Nelson and Nick Pringle is going to have good discipline to not get in foul trouble because they do have Trevon Brazil. They do have Mekhi Mitchell. They do have good guys on the front court that can have good games. And they have a little bit of depth there. It's something that Alabama does not have. So it could easily turn into a good game and a game that Alabama can lose if they don't play smart. Now, where Arkansas obviously struggles is defense, and offensively they can get into big-time lulls. So they're not super great offensively. They're not super talented, but they're capable. I mean, they average giving up three more points than they score a game. 76 points per game on offense, giving up 79 points. But if Alabama wins this game against Arkansas, they'll clinch a double bye in the SEC tournament. If Kentucky loses to Tennessee at Tennessee on Saturday and Alabama beats Arkansas, they'll be locked in as the number two seed, which is huge for any chance that Alabama has to make a run to the SEC final. Because if you're a two seed, you're going to be facing on Friday one of Mississippi State, Texas A&M, LSU, Ole Miss, those type of teams. Teams that Alabama has beaten every single time this year. If you're the three seed, which is what would happen if Alabama won and Kentucky won, Kentucky would be the two, Alabama would be the three, you would have to face more than likely Florida on Friday. So a huge difference overall, and just those two seeds of who you would play on Friday. And then on Saturday, you can worry about whoever you play then. I think Alabama really needs to win against Arkansas and win at least one game in the SEC tournament to hold on to their four seed that they're barely hanging on to right now based on some of the bracketologists that I've seen come out with their seed list and their brackets. I wouldn't want to drop down to that five line and play some of those 12 seeds. I know it's one seed different, but I would much rather play a 13 than a 12 because those 5-12 matchups are always in favor of the 12 seeds more times than not every year. Obviously, they could lose to a 13 seed, but Alabama typically dominates mid-major level teams. But those 12 seeds, they're always super, super dangerous historically in the NCAA tournament. So I don't need to express how much Alabama really needs this game against Arkansas and to win and to have as easy of a game as possible on Friday to try to prevent that. Now, if they make a run and they win the SEC tournament, could they move up to a three? Potentially. It would be tough because the three seeds seem like they're pretty locked in. You got, you know, Baylor. If Baylor were to stumble, I could see them possibly falling out of the three line and put Alabama in. There's just a lot that can happen come to conference tournament time. You never know. But I think Alabama's locked in at the four right now. And as long as they beat Arkansas and probably win their first game of the SEC tournament, they'll stay as a four. They'll probably have to travel somewhere like Pittsburgh or Brooklyn. I've seen Spokane, Washington potentially as well. So they're going to have to travel a good ways. Maybe Raleigh, North Carolina. That would probably be the best bet. But regardless, this season, I want to kind of touch on this for a second. This season has been, overall, in my opinion, a success. As exhausting as it has been watching some of these games, being, you know, the 98, the 95s, or the 100-plus to 100-plus type games, it has been a successful season just because Alabama and Nate Oates lost three assistant coaches to head coaching jobs preseason. He had to recruit without assistant coaches for like 2 or 3 weeks, the portal and high school by himself. And then he hired three assistants. He lost majority of his team last year, mainly his best players being Brandon Miller and Noah Clowney. Javon Quinterly left, Jaden Bradley left, Namari Burnett left. Big time impact players on that team that was probably the best team Alabama's ever had. Had to replace over half the team, all of his assistant coaches, and here they are, 20-10, 12-5 in the SEC, looking at a four at lowest, a five seed in the NCAA tournament. To me, I had Alabama finishing 21-10. I had them finishing 11-7 in the SEC, and I had them about a 6 or 7 seed in the NCAA tournament preseason. So they're finishing right around where I thought they would. But even then, I wasn't that confident. If you'd have told me they would have lost 2 games to Ohio State and Clemson preseason or in the non-conference and then lose all of the big-time non-conference games that they had, those 3 in December, I'd have thought it would have fell off the rails come conference time. But they played excellent in what has been arguably the best overall conference in college basketball, especially at the top. The top teams have been insanely good. Now, the bottom has been really bad, but I think Alabama top, or in the SEC, the top 6 teams are better than pretty much any top 6 teams in any other conference collectively. And Alabama's part of that. And they're at 12-5 right now, could be 13-5, and finish as the number 2 team in the SEC come season's end. So this has been a great season. I know it's probably felt bad the past two weeks or so. And it could go bad in the postseason. You never can tell. But for a bridge year on what should have been or what was going to be a bridge or a rebuilding year, quote unquote, this is about as good as you could have ever imagined. Because historically, 10, 15 years before Nate Oates arrived, these rebuilding years typically are 500 level, hoping to get a 1 or 2 seed in the NIT level season. Now these rebuilding years are, oh man, they might fall to a 5 seed or maybe a 6 seed in the NCAA tournament. So just kind of enjoy this season. Enjoy this program because you never know when Nate Oates might leave. If he does leave, it's something that you want to appreciate in the moment because you never know if it might come back again or if he'll ever leave. So just wanted to point that out there to just enjoy the season, enjoy the ride, no matter how bumpy it is, because Alabama fans have been through a lot worse. So Alabama's number 9 in KenPom. They're still the number 1 overall adjusted offensive team in the country, but they fell to 108 in adjusted defense, and they have the 9th highest or fastest adjusted tempo in the country. Let's see who's the next highest. You go down to number 36 in New Mexico, has the 5th fastest tempo. Everybody else looks to be 15 or lower in the top 40. Even if you go past, where's the next single digit? Tulane at 137. That's insane. So Alabama, 9th fastest tempo in the country, and nobody is close to them for over 130 spots in KenPom. They face the number 2 adjusted overall toughest strength of schedule. And the number 1, I thought this was interesting when I saw it today, they faced the adjusted number 1 toughest opponent offensive schedule in the country. Is that why Alabama's defense is so bad? No. Could it be that's why Alabama's defensive rating is so bad? It's because it's getting bumped up from their poor defensive play, and that's kind of attributed to the opponent's offense being that highly rated. Yes, there could be. But if you look at the offenses they've faced, Arizona, Creighton, Purdue, Tennessee twice, who's, you know, top 20 in KenPom offense. You faced Florida twice. You've played Auburn twice, who's top 20. You've played Kentucky. I mean, they've played some gauntlet level offenses this year, so it hasn't been easy. And you pair that hard road facing those tough of offenses with as bad of a defensive team as this is, you're going to get the outcomes like you've had against Kentucky, like you did against Florida, like you did against Auburn. Those are going to happen. Let's kind of look over into the net for Alabama. They're 7th in the net, which is kind of crazy that they're sticking pretty tight at, you know, top 7 in the net. They're 4-9 overall in quadrant 1 games. They're 7-1 in quadrant 2, and then 9-0 combined quadrant 3 and 4. Just kind of looking at their team sheet here. Indiana State's holding on as a quadrant 1. And they're right there at the cut. Florida being a home win. Losing to Florida on the road actually turned their home win over them into a quad 1 win. I mean, that's college basketball in a nutshell. Mississippi State's right there. If they move up 3 more spots, they'll be a quad 1 win. Not saying all of these will stay quad 1, but with Mississippi State, if they jumped in, Alabama will be 5-9 in quadrant 1 games, which would be really, really good overall, considering they'll be 6-1 in quad 2. But right now they have 4 quad 1 wins. I think it'll probably end up being around 3, maybe 4 at the end of the season, which isn't anything to sneeze at considering the schedule they've played. I mean, you look at it, all the games they've lost outside of 2 are quadrant 1A games, which means that they faced all those teams that they lost to are 26 or higher, which is a really, really tough schedule. They played the number 11, number 20, number 26, and the number 5 team on the road, and they lost to number 2 and 4 on a neutral court. I mean, that's a gauntlet. That's a gauntlet of a schedule. So Alabama, they're set up really well to get a top 4 seed. They just have to kind of finish it out, win against Arkansas on Saturday, get a win on Friday in the SEC tournament against one of those teams, preferably Mississippi State, which would be easily a quadrant 1 win, which would add to the resume, and kind of see where it goes from there. But that's all I have today. I'll record another podcast after the Arkansas game on Saturday morning at 11 a.m. So be on the lookout for that Saturday night, and I'll kind of preview the SEC tournament since we'll have the bracket, and maybe preview a couple other conferences tournaments that might impact Alabama's seeding in the NCAA tournament overall, and kind of who Alabama fans need to root against to kind of help that NCAA tournament seeding come next week. But thank you again for listening to another episode of the Double Dribble Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Harper. I'm the head basketball analyst at Tide Illustrated of the Rivals Network. Please hop on over there, get a subscription. A lot of spring football stuff going on. Obviously, Alabama basketball is right in the thick of it in terms of SEC tournament, NCAA tournament. So a lot of content there I'm producing. So hop on over there, get a subscription to Tide Illustrated. You won't be disappointed. And you can follow me on Twitter at HarperNation24. I'll put out a ton of Alabama basketball content and will throughout the offseason and the rest of this season and beyond. So until next time, please like or subscribe to this podcast. And until next time, this has been another episode of the Double Dribble Podcast. Adios.